The government acts to quell spreading unrest at federal prisons. Japanese protesters condemn the U.S. military. India raises new hope for the release of a kidnapped American. Good morning, this is Frank Settapani with the CBS World News Roundup. The Justice Department has ordered most of the government's 88,000 prisoners locked in their cells at federal institutions across the country after inmates fought guards, set fires, and broke windows in at least four prisons. Some reports link the trouble, which began with Thursday's riot at the prison near Talladega, Alabama, to a congressional vote against reducing penalties for crack cocaine possession. Bureau of Prison spokesman Tom Metzger won't go that far.
We're certainly not ready to suggest that there may be a connection between these disturbances.
The unrest quickly spread to prisons in Allenwood, Pennsylvania, and Memphis, where Greg Bogdan is a prison spokesman.
The institution is secure, and we've had no escapes. And there's no threat to the community.
The other reported flare-up began yesterday afternoon at the lockup in Greenville, Illinois, 40 miles east of St. Louis. Police Sergeant Lou Lorton says authorities finally restored calm at around daybreak.
The facility is now secure, but we are still maintaining presence at the perimeter and will be until they say we are no longer needed there.
Some injuries have been reported in the unrest, but no deaths. Anger rushed through the streets of Okinawa today as thousands of Japanese rallied against the U.S. military presence. CBS News correspondent Barry Peterson reports.
It was one of the largest anti-American rallies in Japanese history. Speaker after speaker attacking Uncle Sam and the American soldiers on nearby bases. They are devils, said one speaker, who wear the masks of human beings. One woman tried to set an American flag on fire, but others in the crowd stopped her. Some others shouted, "Yankee, go home." The anger was ignited by the abduction and rape last month of a 12-year-old girl. Three U.S. servicemen were later charged and are now in Japanese custody, but it inflamed long-standing passions against the bases. Although Okinawa is one of Japan's smallest islands, most of America's presence in Japan is based here. That means living with the roar of F-15s taking off, of artillery live fire practice, or paratroopers dropping into the backyard. Japanese officials insist they want no reduction in the American presence. But even the most diehard supporters of America now concede that changes must be made, that the anti-American feelings in Okinawa must now somehow be heeded. Barry Peterson, CBS News, Tokyo.
An Indian government official says efforts are underway to win the release of Donald Hutchings of Spokane and three other Western hostages, and they may soon rejoin their loved ones. Reporter Christopher Thomas has more on the story from New Delhi.
The embassies in Delhi are being somewhat more cautious, saying that their hopes have been raised before and that it's just possible that these four men are being moved from one location to another, and it doesn't necessarily presage some sort of release.
The four have been held by Islamic separatists since July. The government official says all are believed to be safe and well, except for some minor health problems. Indian newsman Mukhtar Ahmad told us what he knows about Hutchings' condition.
They say he's very weak and he's unable to move. His both feet, they are in bandage because he's suffering from severe frostbite.
The ground has been shaking in southern Mexico. Adrian Bard is following that.
It was the third major quake in Mexico in less than a month, but the first strong tremor of recent memory in Chiapas. Several buildings were damaged, including government offices and 100-year-old churches. Dozens of people were cut and banged up by falling debris, and scores of others were treated for panic in local hospitals. The quake also caused panic in Mexico City, some 600 miles northwest of the epicenter. Adrian Bard for CBS News, Mexico City.
It's 4 minutes past. In a stem-winding Jefferson Jackson Day speech in Des Moines, President Clinton declared that his efforts have the country on a roll. Mark Noller has that.
An audience of Iowa Democrats served as an enthusiastic amen chorus to the president as he delivered his most scathing attack to date on the Republican budget plan. Addressing a fundraiser last night for Iowa's Democratic Party, Mr. Clinton said the GOP plan would force 1 million senior citizens off Medicare, make college loans more expensive for students, and let corporations loot pension funds. And under the Republican plan, the president said some low-income working families would be pushed into poverty.
I do not want to live in a country that throws people out of the middle class and puts them back in the underclass. And I don't think you do either. I don't think you do either. I don't think any of you want to live in that kind of America.
In no uncertain terms, the president has made the fight over the budget his top political issue, even though just hours earlier he was saying he wants to avoid a big partisan fight over the budget and that the debate, in his words, need not be overly politicized. Mark Knoller, CBS News, with the president in Des Moines, Iowa.
An obscure piece of history is being recalled this weekend. Barry Bagnato tells us about it.
On June 13, 1952, an RB-29 reconnaissance bomber vanished near the east coast of what was then the Soviet Union. 12 Americans were on board, but being spies, they were filed away by the Pentagon and classified as non-combat losses.
They were going into harm's way, and for the longest time, no one recognized their efforts.
Greg Skavinsky changed all that. After the Russians admitted the plane had been shot down by a pair of Soviet fighters, Skavinsky urged the Air Force to honor the 12 men, including his uncle, William Homer, the flight engineer.
It's the right thing to do.
Today, at Fort Meade, Maryland, a ceremony will be held. Air Force Sergeant James Katzman.
There will be a 21-gun salute and later on taps played.
But more importantly, after 43 years, Purple Hearts and Distinguished Flying Crosses will be awarded. It has never been established whether anyone survived the crash. That mystery and the long wait for recognition has hurt family members.
It's time to say, look, we appreciate your efforts. Not only does the Air Force appreciate what you were doing, but the country appreciates what you were doing.
For Greg Skavinsky and the other relatives of the 12 American flyers, the time finally has come. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
It's 8 minutes past.
Baseball in Cleveland in October. Unbelievable.
Actually, the World Series opens tonight in Atlanta before moving to Believe Land next week. It's Cleveland's first World Series since 1954.
I'd like to thank God because I've waited for this my whole life. So if he had anything to do with it, I'd sure like to thank him.
I'm 40 years old. It's never happened in my lifetime. It's wonderful.
The enthusiasm of Indians and Braves fans is shared by some Native Americans, as Matt Cook of WGST reports from Atlanta.
The National Coalition on Racism in Sports and the Media says that racism in sports is as much America's favorite pastime as baseball. And they're calling on the team owners to change the team names. Ken Ryan is with the American Indian Movement.
We're the only group of people in the United States, only race of people that has sports mascots and sports teams named after them. If it was the Atlanta Negroes, the Atlanta Hispanics, any situation like that, the stadium would be burned down overnight.
The group says it's dehumanization, plain and simple, and especially hurtful to Native American children. In addition to changing the team names, the activists cite the Atlanta Tomahawk Chop and the Indians' red-faced bucktooth mascot, Chief Wahoo. Matt Cook for CBS News, Atlanta.
It's 10 past.